Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record Program number 417, concluding the investigation of September 11th, Iraq, etc. This is being recorded on July 21st of the year 2003. This is going to be the last consecutive program dealing with the issues of September 11th and related matters, including the war in Iraq. Obviously, this is a huge event, and in many ways, this is sort of the one-size-fits-all For the Record series. Not only do I believe that the events in and around September 11th constitute a culmination of an historical process which involved much of the 20th century and will very possibly dominate the 21st century, namely, at one level, the successful perpetuation and ultimate triumph of fascism as a political system, but I believe, more specifically, the triumph of an underground Reich, literally a Third Reich gone underground and perpetuated in mafia-like style. There will obviously be many substantive or subsequent, I should say, and substantive updates of the September 11th matters. But there are other things that I want to get to, and I'm finally going to tear myself away. One of the things that is going to be upcoming, I think, are periodic excerpts of some of the archive shows in order to help flesh out the understanding of some of the younger members of the listening audience. But this is going to conclude the long series I've been doing about September 11th. It actually began formally with For the Record program number 325, and we're going all the way on up through 417. Let me remind you that the heroic WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, right across the river from Ground Zero, is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at wfmu.org/Dave Emery, DaveEmory, one word. Older programs are available for download only on Real Audio at a longer URL linked to the wfmu.org/Dave Emery website and to the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. The Spitfire website is equipped with Real Audio as well, and you can hear the most recently recorded pair of For the Record segments on the Spitfire website. Spitfire stocks all of the tapes and CDs that I've done over the years, all of the various programs, and has long descriptions of the programs, including article-length, detailed, annotated descriptions of the For the Record programs. By the way, as I speak on July 21st of 2003, I will apologize. I've gotten a little bogged down in some of the writing. I'm just concluding the description for For the Record 414. So regular listeners who've been downloading the descriptions, don't despair. It'll take maybe a couple of weeks to get caught up. I'm also going to be shortening the description somewhat, simply in order to take the workload off of my own shoulders, because I do all of the writing and all of the editing, and it's quite a task. They will be annotated and quite meticulous, but they're going to be a little bit shorter, simply to make it easier on myself. But for listeners who may be a little alarmed or frustrated, bear with me. I've almost finished 414, and the others will be forthcoming. Now, we're going to move to an article from a small publication called Forward. This was authored on June 20th, 2003. And this article contains an investigative pathway that I think in many ways illustrates some of the complexities of the issues in and around September 11th and Iraq. I would caution again that these events are far more complex than they have made out to be in not only the mainstream press, let alone the right-wing press and the Bush and by the Bush administration, but considerably more complex than they've made out to be in the so-called alternative media as well. One of the things that's at issue both with regard to September 11th and, as we'll see, to a certain extent, with Iraq concerns the fact that many of the illicit activities in which the Saudis, the Al-Qaeda network, the Muslim Brotherhood, and others have been involved, and also to an extent Iraq, overlap huge, very powerful economic networks, which in turn course through not only many countries, but in particular through many of the less than transparent tax havens such as the Cayman Islands, Switzerland, the Channel Islands, and other entities. And this routing of this tremendous economic power and these very important networks through these tax havens, not readily visible to even a skilled investigator, is done precisely in order to hide the activities from public view. And this is an important point to understand. It should also be noted that the Underground Reich, utilizing the networks put together by Martin Bormann, Hitler's in all probability late deputy, also not only go through these same areas, but overlap the milieu of Al-Qaeda, or not Al-Qaeda, but Al-Taqwa, which in turn overlaps Al-Qaeda to a certain extent, according to investigators. I would counsel that people avoid oversimplification, indeed, vis-a-vis the brouhaha after Iraq. I would note simply in passing that the Iraqi intelligence operative who allegedly was the contact point for the allegations concerning an Al-Qaeda Iraqi link through Czechoslovakia has now been taken prisoner. So people who are willing to limit their criticism of the altogether criminal Bush administration, not necessarily criminal for all of the reasons it's been made out to be by the so-called progressive sector, but manifestly criminal and, in my opinion, altogether fascist Bush administration, those people who are simply fixating on the dubious nature of the Czechoslovakian connection or the Czechoslovakian allegation and other one-dimensional points of criticism are leaving themselves wide open for a political counterattack. And if they don't think that Karl Rove and company are capable of a successful political counterattack, well, contact me via email because I have some real estate in the Florida Everglades that I would love to sell them at a very, very, very good price. Anyway, with that long caveat, note that some of the international financial networks that were used for the Oil for Food program by Iraq overlap the milieu of Al-Taqwa, and that in turn a Saudi oil company that is one of the defendants in the trillion-dollar lawsuit filed on behalf of survivors of the victims of September 11th against the Saudi elite, as well as Youssef Nada and others of the Al-Taqwa network. Note that these international financial and political networks, largely clandestine and clandestine by design, that the Iraqi Oil for Food financial networks overlap Al-Taqwa and Delta Oil. And some investigators have alleged that some of this money may have been used, laundered, so to speak, to help finance terrorist activities. I would note one of the points that I made in my investigation of September 11th and related matters, and that is a critical point of information advanced by University of Texas professor Philip Bobbitt. And that is the concept of the virtual state, a state without geographical borders. He used the term in relation to Al-Qaeda. I believe that's valid. I'm using the term in relation to Al-Qaeda and also to the Underground Reich. Both in turn overlap the milieu of Al-Taqwa, but they are not coterminous. I think there are elements of Al-Qaeda that would be termed Islamist, but not Islamo-fascist, the distinction that we were wrestling with last week. I also think there are elements of the Al-Taqwa milieu, such as those around, or the Al-Qaeda milieu, excuse me, such as those around Al-Taqwa and the milieu of the Grand Mufti, the alcohol-consuming Ahmed Huber, not the usual activity that Muslims engage in, and these would be properly termed Islamo-fascist, but I do think that Some observers who have effectively distinguished between Islamism and fascism and have critiqued the use of the term Islamo-fascism do have a point with which I've come to be in partial agreement. I do think that there are elements of the Al-Qaeda milieu overlapping Al-Taqwa, the milieu of the Grand Mufti, and the milieu of the Underground Reich that would be properly called Islamo-fascist. So with those many and long caveats, again, this article is by Mark Perlman, P-E-R-E-L-M-A-N, of the Forward staff. It's Forward, June 20th, 2003. Oil for Food Sales Seen as Iraq Tied to Al-Qaeda, subtitled U.S. Probes Bank Network. It reads in part as follows. The hunt for Saddam Hussein's money could provide some clues to one of the claims made by the Bush administration to justify its war in Iraq, the possible link between the former Iraqi regime and the Al-Qaeda terrorist group. two entities, a shadowy banking network linked by the administration to Al-Qaeda and a Saudi oil company close to the Taliban regime, were involved in buying oil from Saddam Hussein under the nation's Oil for Food program, the Forward has learned. The now-defunct program allowed Iraq to buy food and medicine with its oil proceeds under UN supervision. Although the oil sales in question were legal and approved by the United Nations, some observers say the system involved kickbacks and was used by Saddam to buy political support and to finance intelligence activities and even terrorist groups. Quote, "It seems very plausible that some of the oil money went to terrorism financing," unquote, a terrorism financing expert closely monitoring Iraq said on condition of anonymity. Quote, "I believe this actually happened," unquote. Among Iraq's oil customers since 1997 is a Liechtenstein-based company called GALP, that's G-A-L-P, International Trading Establishment, a subsidiary of Portugal's main oil company, according to a list of oil purchasers obtained by The Forward. The UN has not published the list. The company chose as its legal representative in Liechtenstein, a tax haven known for hosting thousands of shell companies, a company called Aesop Trust, according to Liechtenstein business records. Aesop Trust, that's spelled A-S-A-T, was designated by the United States and the UN as a financer of Al-Qaeda through its links to Al-Taqwa, a cluster of financial entities spanning the globe from the Bahamas to Italy, and controlled by members of the Muslim Brotherhood. The operation raises the possibility that Iraq quietly funneled money to Al-Qaeda by deliberately choosing an oil company working with one of the terrorist group's alleged financial backers. This last sentence, again, because I think it highlights some of the questions and, in many ways, the crux of this particular investigative pathway. The operation raises the possibility that Iraq quietly funneled money to Al-Qaeda by deliberately choosing an oil company working with one of the terrorist group's alleged financial backers. Another oil company that contracted with Iraq, Delta Services, is a now-defunct Geneva-based subsidiary of Delta Oil, a Saudi company that enjoyed a close relationship with the Taliban in Afghanistan at the time that they were harboring bin Laden. Delta Oil was a major actor in a major pipeline project to bring gas from Central Asia to Pakistan through Afghanistan in the mid-1990s, alongside the American oil company Unocal and another Saudi oil company controlled by a controversial Saudi millionaire. Delta Services landed Iraqi oil export contracts in 2000 and 2001, according to UN sources and a trade journal. John Fawcett and Christine Negroni, two investigators working for the New York law firm Kreindler & Kreindler, believe Delta Services won contracts to export 13 million barrels, meaning some 7 million were paid in kickbacks or 70 cents per barrel. The law firm has already filed a massive lawsuit against Al-Qaeda, Iraq, Saudi officials, and an array of Islamic banks, charities, and groups on behalf of a group of September 11th family victims. It is now looking into the Iraqi oil deals to see if they can add defendants to the lawsuit. Galp Energia, the Portuguese national oil company controlling Galp International, did not answer a series of questions sent via email. On November 7, 2001, President Bush said that the Al-Taqwa network was raising, managing, and distributing money for Al-Qaeda under the guise of a legitimate banking business activity. The administration froze the assets of several companies linked to the bank, including Aesop Trust. Swiss and Italian police raided the homes and offices of the top Al-Taqwa officials the same day, as well as those of Erwin Wachter, W-A-C-H-T-E-R, the head of Aesop Trust. His son, Martin Wachter, confirmed that Galp International was one of the companies represented by Aesop Trust and that Galp was dealing with Iraq under the Oil for Food program. So again, exactly what comes of this investigation remains to be determined. One of the main sticking points here is that these networks, Iraqi, Saudi, Al-Qaeda, Al-Taqwa, etc., go through, again, tax shelter areas such as Liechtenstein, Switzerland, the Channel Islands, the Cayman Islands, that are deliberately constructed in order to hide the activities from the observer, from the gaze of observers or the scrutiny of observers, even highly expert observers with investigative resources far greater than yours or mine. So please note that in passing. I'm going to review an element from For the Record Program 413, also discussing an evidentiary tributary running between the milieu of Al-Taqwa and the milieu of Iraq. And again, this is non-definitive, but interesting and suggestive up to a point. We're going to review an excerpt from an article from the Sunday Times of London. The article's titled, Banker Who Hid Saddam's Millions, and it was authored by Stephen Gray, Nick Fielding, John Ungud Thomas, Edin Hamzik, Paolo Fusi, and Eben Black. It reads in part, and by the way, Mr. Al-Mahdi here was Saad al-Mahdi, a Saddam advisor later put to death on the suspicions of Saddam Hussein. Years after the death of al-Mahdi, his family decided to pursue some of the millions that had washed through the network of offshore companies. They hired Gianluca Boscaro, a Swiss lawyer, to bring a case which named, among others, Borradori's accountant and other trustees. By the way, this is Emilio Borradori, one of the people who handled the account for Saddam Hussein. By the way, this account went through the Banco del Gottardo, the Swiss subsidiary of the late Banco Ambrosiano, or the now-defunct Banco Ambrosiano, and one of the corporate fronts inextricably linked with Al-Taqwa. So note that this account went to the Banco del Gottardo, inextricably linked with Al-Taqwa, and there's another link here as well. They hired Gianluca Boscaro, a Swiss lawyer, to bring a case which named, among others, Borradori's accountant and other trustees. Through the legal action, Boscaro secured evidence of how, at least in part, Saddam had siphoned off a fortune and hidden it around the world. Increasingly paranoid about his own safety, Boscaro told one friend that should anything untoward happen to him, the documents should be brought to public attention. Unquote. In the midst of a legal action in August last year, Boscaro, an adventurous man in his 40s, died while taking time off from the case to relax in the foothills of the Piedmont Mountains. At around 7:30 p.m. on a clear sunny evening, he was floating high in the sky beneath a paraglider. Suddenly, the canopy seemed to stall. Boscaro plunged to his death. It's a dangerous sport, and such accidents are not uncommon, but officials who examined the canopy noticed cords were damaged. Police concluded it was an accident, although friends of Boscaro dispute their findings. Accident or murder? It may never be known. But for Saddam, the end was nearing. Within months, coalition troops were on their way to Kuwait. However, the many millions Saddam siphoned off for his own purposes may never be fully traced, let alone recovered. And reviewing another element from For the Record 413, we also went into this in For the Record 377. This is an excerpt from the online essay. This is one of three essays by Kevin Coogan about the Al-Taqwa milieu. This is from Report on Islamists, the Far Right, and Al-Taqwa. These are all three of Kevin Coogan's very important papers on Al-Taqwa are available online at www.oraclesyndicate.org. Oracle Syndicate is one word composed of those two, Oracle and Syndicate, oraclesyndicate.org. The three papers, the first one that I'm going to excerpt now, Report on Islamists, the Far Right, and Al-Taqwa. The other is Ahmed or Another. The other two are Ahmed Huber, the Avalon Gemeinschaft and the Swiss New Right, and the mysterious Ahmed Huber, friend to Hitler, Allah, and Bin Laden. And by the way, this should not be misunderstood as constituting endorsement on the part of Kevin Coogan for the working hypothesis that I'm presenting on September 11th and related matters. That having been said, excerpting Report on Islamists, the Far Right, and Al-Taqwa, it was at the offices of the aforementioned late Gianluca Boscaro, the late hang gliding aficionado, who was hired by the al-Mahdi family to investigate the, quote, Satan, unquote, account. That was the account that was held at the Al-Taqwa-connected Banco del Gottardo for Saddam Hussein. It was at Gianluca Boscaro's offices that Al-Taqwa was incorporated. Quote, On July 21, 1988, at the bureau of a Lugano-based notary named Gianluca Boscaro gathered Huber, the Swiss professor Mohamed Mansour, and his wife, Zainab Mansour Fatou, as well as the Tunisian Youssef Nada and Ali Galeb Himat, who both live in the Italian enclave of Campione d'Italia in Switzerland. Himat had come from Damascus in 1958 and first settled down in Germany and then in Austria. The Alexandrian-born Egyptian Nada 2 years later came first to Austria and then to Germany. Nada's oldest daughter married the son of the director of the Islamist center in Aachen, Al-Itar Issam, who was considered by the German Office for the Protection of the Constitution, or for Verfassungsschutz, one of the most dangerous Islamists in Germany. Nada later settled down in Ticino. Both Nada and Himat are members of the Muslim Brotherhood, and in the 1990s both took Italian citizenship. I would note that the book Dollars for Terror by Richard LaBaviere alleges that Nada worked for the Abwehr, German military intelligence, under Admiral Canaris. And part two of the four-part series from the Asia Times called Islamism, Fascism, and Terrorism by Mark Erickson alleges that Youssef Nada helped to effect the escape of the Grand Mufti from Jerusalem to Palestine after World War II. One of the things in connection with the Al-Taqwa milieu is we could think of Al-Taqwa as perhaps a huge mansion on the top of a mountaintop that overlooks a number of vistas, a number of valleys. One of them could be thought of as the Islamist and, in some cases, Islamo-fascist milieu, the milieu of Al-Qaeda, the Muslim Brotherhood, François Genoux, and others. Yet another vista goes in a radically different direction, although one that is inextricably linked with this, and that is the milieu of the P2, post-World War II Italian fascism, related elements of the Vatican, and the milieu of Silvio Berlusconi. Indeed, Pier Felice Barchi, the attorney for Youssef Nada and one of the principals with the aforementioned Banco del Gottardo, handles the Swiss investments for Silvio Berlusconi, the abrasive Italian prime minister, and a former member of the P2, whose political coalition is inextricably linked with the Alleanza Nazionale, the final incarnation of the Italian fascist party, which also has many links running in the direction of the Al-Taqwa milieu. This, I think, illustrates some of the complexities of this investigation, because although Al-Taqwa does overlap the milieu of Al-Qaeda and the Muslim Brotherhood, itself Islamist. In turn, I think Al-Taqwa and related elements could be more properly termed Islamo-fascist because they're inextricably linked with elements that could be most clearly, I think, identified as fascist, such as Alleanza Nazionale, elements like that running to the milieu of the Grand Mufti, etc. By way of briefly looking at how complex the Via Al-Taqwa could be thought of as being, again, it overlooks the Islamist slash Islamo-fascist valley, and it also overlooks the P2 Italian fascist slash Vatican valley, too. Bear in mind that the Banco del Gottardo, inextricably linked with and a correspondent institution of Al-Taqwa, is the former Swiss subsidiary of the Banco Ambrosiano. Reading now from the San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, June 19th of 2003. This is an AP story by Nicole Winfield. It's called Bribery Trial of Italy's Leader Stops. And this talks about the Operation Clean Hands investigation, which, as we've looked at in numerous For the Record programs, including For the Record 351 and numbers 377 and 378, went in the direction of the Gulf Office, in turn a subsidiary of Mercy International, Banco del Gottardo, and Al-Taqwa. So again, this is a very complex concatenation. Skipping down in the story, Dateline Rome. Berlusconi's center-right allies in Parliament championed the legislation after his attorneys tried and failed to have the 3-year-old trial delayed or moved from Milan, where Italy's Clean Hands anti-corruption probes were begun a decade ago. The Clean Hands probes were conducted into the milieu of the P2, the Years of Lead. They went to Silvio Berlusconi, and they also went to the milieu of Al-Taqwa, Banco del Gottardo, and these international clandestine financial networks. Lastly, we're going to take a look at the death of a British scientist, this fellow David Kelly. was alleged by the BBC after his death, I would note, to have been the source for accounts that the Blair government had hyped, quote, sexed up, unquote, reports about Saddam Hussein's weapons of mass destruction. Something that passed a point is beyond debate. But I think, again, the whole issue of the WMDs in the Iraq War has been oversimplified. Interestingly enough, one of the accounts that appeared on the internet, this specifically from a Reuters story from the Yahoo internet site, within an hour of the death of Paul Kelly, or the announcement of it, or David Kelly, excuse me, has a very interesting detail that most left out. This is British scientist titled British Scientist Mole Caught in Crossfire by Paul Magendie, M-A-G-E-N-D-I-E. It's Dateline London. It's a Reuters story. It reads in part, a soft-spoken British scientist found dead in woods near his home was caught in the crossfire in a deadly war of words between Britain's public broadcaster and the government over the Iraq conflict. After police said Friday they had found a body matching that of Defense Ministry biologist David Kelly, the tragedy proved provoked much soul-searching among friends, colleagues, and politicians. The bearded scientist was the suspected mole behind a British Broadcasting Corporation report alleging that Prime Minister Tony Blair's communications supremo, Alistair Campbell, quote, sexed up, unquote, a dossier laying out the case for war with Iraq. The shock struck at the heart of government and reverberated around the world to Tokyo, where Blair embarked in a somber mood on a tour of Asia after speedily confirming there will be a judicial inquiry into the tragedy. Inevitably, Kelly's death revived voter mistrust and ensured that the long-running row over whether Saddam Hussein had weapons of destruction showed no signs of fading. Quote, he's dead. We are now alone with our consciences, unquote, family friend and television journalist Tom Mangold said of the former weapons inspector, grilled in Parliament over allegations the government hyped intelligence to justify the war in Iraq. Now, note again that he was the alleged mole for the allegation that the Blair government had hyped it, but note the following quote that has not been in the subsequent accounts I've examined. Quote, and this is from a close family friend, Tom Mangold, who was outraged at the abuse of David Kelly, the late David Kelly. Quote, he was the one inspector that Saddam Hussein personally wanted kicked out of Iraq because David really knew what was going on, unquote, Mangold said. David Kelly's specialty was biological warfare, and in the second side of this program, we're going to briefly touch on the Bush administration's obvious gross exaggerations of the dangers presented by Iraq and some of the motives for going to war. But bear in mind that Tony Blair is not George Bush, and bear in mind one of the questions that I have about the Blair government's motives for going to war, namely, the foot-and-mouth disease outbreak in the spring of 2001, which was devastating to the British economy, the British agricultural economy in particular, which caused a lot of problems for the Blair government. And note also that Saddam Hussein's government, even according to reports coming out of the UN, had been stockpiling foot-and-mouth disease. But we're going to continue that inside, too. WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery. Older programs available for download only at a longer URL. Link to both that URL and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. Before too much longer, I'll have all of the descriptions updated for the Record programs, and so within a short period of time, there will be a detailed annotated description of For the Record program number 417. I've almost completed 414, but I have completed side two of For the Record program number 417, conclusion to the September 11th and Iraq investigations. This is being recorded on July 21st of 2003. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.